consacrée de la patrie, conduit soutien nos braves vengeurs.
Revolutions have anthems. The bloody passion of the French Revolution still rings true in La Marseillaise, whatever version you play. In revolutionary Islam, music is its own controversy. The use of music, the playing of instruments, is a source of religious tension going back centuries. Generally speaking, Sufis are into tunes. Traditional sheikhs and imams are not. One consequence of the Iranian Revolution and the Taliban revolutions in Afghanistan was a banning of popular music of any kind. This tension makes the new book Rebel Music, Race, Empire, and the New Muslim Youth Culture that much more interesting. It's written by Columbia University lecturer Hisham Aidi. He says there is an amazing musical playlist of revolution inspired by Islam despite this long-standing tension. He gave us a tour, beginning with a band called the Kominas. Their origins? Punkistani, Aidi says. Typical of young musicians taking from everywhere to make a new sound.
There's long been this debate, Sufis versus ultra-conservative Muslims, about music. And in the day and the years after 9/11, the argument was made that, you know, one way to spark a reformation in the Muslim world to promote democracy is to back the Sufis. And music came to be seen as an important tool for public diplomacy, as a way to promote a quote-unquote tolerant Islam, liberal Islam, and so on. So the Kominas are three Pakistani-American kids from Boston, raised between Boston and Lahore. They're into punk rock, they're into Qawwali, they're into rap.
A lot of people won't get no justice tonight. A lot of people won't get no supper tonight. Just remember to kick it over and praise Jehovah.
And what's fascinating about them is that they appear in the mid-2000s, right? Partly to contest sort of conservative attitude towards music within the American Muslim community and U.S. policy and state policy that tries to really instrumentalize Sufism.
You know, the Kominas, in a sense, have an advantage in that they look back on a lot of history and have the advantage of being able to immerse themselves in tons and tons of musics. You also describe the influential qualities of the North African experience with Muslim music really in the 1940s. Talk about Salim Halali.
Salim Halali is really a remarkable individual, right? So he grows up in eastern Algeria, is born in eastern Algeria, Annaba. He goes to Algiers and he makes his way as a stowaway on a ship full of cattle to Marseille to pursue a dream of being a flamenco singer, singing Arabic flamenco. So he gets to Paris in 1937. He's part of the World Expo exhibit, and he becomes enormously popular, playing in different cabarets. And then he disappears. You know, you don't really hear much about him. He dies in 2005. And as soon as he dies, there's this enormous interest in his life. The younger generation is very interested in this artist who is seen as a symbol of Andalusian convivencia. He's seen as a symbol of Muslim-Jewish reconciliation. He's seen as someone who can help calm the memory competition, the interreligious tensions that exist in Europe. And his story, this is what's most interesting about him, is that when Vichy came to power in France, the Grand Mosque, the Grand Mosque in Paris, actually issued some certificates to protect North African Jews from Nazi persecution. And one of them was allegedly Salim Halali.
And the movement that you describe is hardly embodied just in him. You've also got Maurice Al-Medioni.
Right. Maurice Medioni was in Algeria when Vichy came to power, right? And he would be taken out of school as Algerian Jews would be stripped of their French citizenship. And then when Operation Torch, when the Americans landed in November 1942, he would encounter all these American GIs. And he became friends with Puerto Rican soldiers who taught him how to sing Spanish songs and how to play the piano and so on. So he was exposed to Latin music. He'd been trained as an Andalusi pianist, playing with his right hand. He says, the Puerto Ricans taught me to play ragtime and you know, Latin rumbas with my left hand. And he creates, you know, this genre that he calls piano oriental or descarga oriental. And he's someone else who toiled as a tailor for decades in Marseille, right? Nobody knew about him. But in the early 2000s, suddenly he enjoys a rebirth. You know, people are rediscovering, you know, who is Maurice Lamidioni.
Do you think he and Hilali's co-optation, acquiring absorption of various musical styles because of their particular history, you know, has a kind of a hip-hop quality to it? It's not so different from what hip-hop groups are doing today with very different musics. I mean, Kool and the Gang, for instance, has an experience of encountering Islam, which ends up in a very famous song that you describe in this book.
Right. The argument that you hear is that Celebration was actually inspired by the Quran. And, you know, I did some research and I found an interview that Ronald Bell, who's the saxophonist for Kool and the Gang, did in the late 70s. And he says, yes, indeed. You know, one morning I was reading the Quran and I was reading a particular passage, a surah, where God creates man, creates Adam, and the angels start to celebrate. And it came to me, you know, that's where I wrote the lyric, come on, celebrate, come on. You would not expect this. This is the song that's played at ball games, at parades. I mean, it's become an anthem. And it's deeply ironic.
One of the great polyglot stories that's in this book is in Latin America. Tell me about Cafu.
I ran into Cafu, also known as Ali Jamal Shabazz, in Sao Paulo. I was on the outskirts of Sao Paulo visiting a mosque, and somebody had told me about a small hip-hop collective, right?
Shabazz, there's a familiar name.
Exactly. So this hip-hop collective, you have a number of Afro-Brazilians who have embraced Islam and who have adopted the last name Shabazz after Malcolm X. I mean, what they told me is that hip-hop gave us our political education. And what Ali Shabazz tells me, he says, here in Brazil, you know, you look at racial inequality, he says we have dozens of Trayvon Martins here in Brazil every day, and no one talks about it. And he says the people who die young in Brazil are people who don't know their history. So it's a process of historical recovery that they're trying to do through music.
Let's go out on this track called Radical. It's by Desso Dawg. Willkommen in meiner Welt voll Hass und Blut. Ich schreibe Zeilen für meine Kinder und das mit Blut. In einer Welt, wo man nicht mehr weiß, was der nächste Tag bringt. Kinder, Seelen, Wein, leise, wenn der schwarze Engel singt. Willkommen in meiner Welt voll Hass. Tell me about Desso Dawg.
Desso Dawg is a German hip-hop artist. He started off as a gangster rapper, and then he moved away from gangster hip-hop and became a Salafism, and then he would become a jihadi, right? And he is currently somewhere in Syria. You know, rumors have it that he may be dead. Others say that he's injured. But he represents the kind of extremist rap that European state officials are worried about. And European governments are deciding how to respond to this kind of thing, right? And so I talk about him, Desso Dawg, and in this particular track, he's talking about his conversion, how he went from a world of exclusion and violence and street life and hustling and so on to embrace Islam. And so it's a new protest culture that has gone global that is circulating, you know, via the social media and through migration.
Professor Hisham Aidi, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
Hisham Aidi, author of Rebel Music, Race, Empire, and the New Muslim Youth Culture.